A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rehm, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on October 9, 1994, in the series The First Testament, entitled Israel, God Wrestler, A Tale of Providence and Grace. The scripture readings for the sermon are all from the book of Genesis, chapter 25, verses 19 through 34, chapter 27, verses 30 through 38, and chapter 32, verses 22 through 32. The texts for the sermon are Genesis 27, verse 38, chapter 32, verses 9 and 10, and verse 28. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
We're in a series of messages in which we're trying to see the broad sweep of the biblical story. And the message this morning is about the one about whom we read, Jacob. And surely you can tell that there's material there for a dozen sermons. And I have done series on Jacob in the past. And I can't this morning but simply hit the mountain peaks of that story. But I'm not treating the story of Jacob this morning in order to find the preaching values that are there or the applications that are there for our life so much as rather to see the story of Jacob in the puzzle of the biblical story. For as I'm sure you are tired of hearing me say now, those first 11 chapters of Genesis were Israel's understanding of where it fit in the broad scheme of things. Those first 11 chapters were stories told by which Israel gave expression to its understanding of where it stood in relationship to the whole cosmos and the whole sweep of human history. In those 11 chapters, it witnessed to its understanding of the human situation, why life is like it is. Those stories, so profound, gave expression to the best insights that Israel had about the world and God and the human condition. But then, last week, we moved from that universal scope to the more particular focus, because that was Israel's story. In the 10th chapter of Genesis, you have the table of the nations, and it is out of those nations now that God calls one family. And the call was to Abraham and Sarah. And we looked at that story, that really beautiful and tragic story, the story of Abraham and Sarah who had to trust God in the extremity, who in the meantime took things into their own hands so that Sarah's slave girl Hagar bore Abraham a son whom he loved. And Sarah, being so human, forcing the slave girl and her son out of the tent. Ishmael, the tragic story of Ishmael, the firstborn, Abraham's beloved, but turned away. The question, is this matter of God's choice and selection? Does it always have to be a case of one who is elected and one who is rejected? But Isaac, the child of promise, comes. Not Ishmael. Ishmael, as it were, Abraham's son by normal natural means. But Israel understood that it was not the product of human ingenuity or human potential. It was a miracle. It was the creation of God. And so out of Sarah's barren womb must arise the child of promise, who eventually is born, Isaac. And then Isaac's story is told, although Isaac is not a very colorful figure and he doesn't get a lot of press. But then Isaac Isaac takes a wife, Rebekah. Abraham sends his servant back to the home territory in order to secure a bride for Isaac. And Isaac and Rebekah are married, but here it is again. Rebekah is barren. Because it is not the case that once God gets this whole thing going by grace, that it can kind of generate itself. No, not at all. Once again, a barren womb. For this people that will be born, that will be as numerous as the stars of the heaven. This time, conception occurs. It's a tough pregnancy. Rebekah wonders if she shouldn't die. And then she's told, two nations are in your womb, foreshadowing the conflict that will come down through the ages, beginning with the brothers Esau and Jacob. Esau, the first out of the womb, his heel grasped by his brother Jacob, giving Jacob his name, heel or supplanter or grasper, setting us up for the conflict between these two brothers when, again, the ordinary way of things will be upset, because it will not be the firstborn Esau, it will be the second son, Jacob, who will be the bearer of the promise. Why, you say? Why, I say? The inscrutable mystery of God. Why, I don't know. It runs smack into it again. Not Ishmael, but Isaac. Not Esau, but Jacob. And all of our sympathies are with Esau. He's the kind of kid that everybody would love. And Isaac, soft-skinned Isaac, his mother's favorite. One day Esau comes in famished. And Jacob is stirring up a pot of stew, scheming and planning, always thinking. Shrewd Jacob says, I'll give you the stew for the rites of first birth. Esau said, what's the future? It's now that I'm hungry. Give me the soup. But then, the really tough part of the story. Isaac is old now. He's blind. He's ready to die. He's ready to bestow that final blessing on his firstborn. And so he calls Esau and says, go to the field and hunt and bring me venison and fix me a stew and I'll bless you. You know the story. Rebekah hears. She tells Jacob, go get a kid. They cook it up. She puts skins on his soft skin and sends him in to the blind old man to pose as Esau in order that he might get the blessing. And he gives Jacob the blessing even with some suspicions about the identity of this one. Esau comes back and weeps bitterly. Once again, the same cry as Ishmael. Is there only one blessing? Can you not bless me, O my father? But the deed is done. The word has been spoken. The word cannot be recalled. That's the way it was in that culture, in their understanding. And if that's the understanding that everyone shares, that's the way it is. That has power. And so Jacob has to flee because Esau says, now twice he's done it to me. I'll kill him. And he flees a day's journey and finally, exhausted, lies down to rest. And of course, one would suspect that he would be wide-eyed all night, trembling with guilt and fear. Not so. He lies down and sleeps like a baby and has a dream so magnificent that it brings tears to our eyes. There is a heaven. There is a ladder stretching up to heaven with angels coming up and down and at the top God. A revelation, a theophany, call it what you will, an experience of an encounter with the living God who says, I am the God of Abraham and of Isaac, your fathers, and I will be your God, and you will be the covenant child, and I will bless all nations in you. I will be with you wherever you go. I will keep you, and I will bring you home. Amazing, isn't it? He goes off to his uncle, gets himself his wife Leah, and then Rachel. Leah is given to him by subterfuge, but he works longer and he gets Rachel, and he loves Rachel, but Rachel is what? Barren. Here we are again. Finally, through all the prosperity, he gains his flocks and his herds. And Rachel has a child, Joseph, the wife, the love of his life, gives him the apple of his eye, and he prepares to go home. But to go home is to meet Esau. But always equal to the task, probably with a yellow pad or two, making notations, he plans and he schemes, ready once again to manipulate this stronger, weaker brother. And then it is the night before the encounter when he sends the family over the brook but remains there in the darkness alone. And the story tells us a man assaulted him. A man, a demon. Now we know between the lines this is none other than God, wrestling with God, wrestling all night, and seemingly about to prevail. But the dawn is about to break, and the match must be over before sunrise. And so, at the moment that it seems that Jacob will prevail, the thigh is touched, and he is crippled. And now he clings to the other, but not in order to overcome, but rather he clings to the other out of need, crying out, bless me, I will not let you go until you bless me. And he's given a new name. No longer Jacob, the deceiver, the supplanter, the grasper, but Israel. God rules, God protects, God preserves. And the name in that culture also signified the person, and a new name signified a new person. Jacob is born anew at Jabbok that night as he wrestles with God, striving with every ounce of energy to prevail, finally crippled, fearfully wondering who this was, only to discover that he is struggling with a God of all mercy who blesses him there. And the sun begins to light a conflagration in the eastern sky, and we see Jacob limping off into the dawn. He seems even to be dancing on that crippled leg. He has been crippled by a very great grace. Fascinating story. Israel is telling about its roots. Israel is trying to understand who it is. It is trying to understand itself in the light of the whence of its birth. Abraham, Isaac, but Jacob? I don't suppose it's true anymore in school classrooms, but it seems as though when I was going through, there was always a picture of George Washington, the father of the nation. Wasn't George Washington the one that never told any lies? I mean, founding fathers and mothers should be heroes and heroines. They should be exemplars. They should be models. They are those who are held up to us as great figures, and we're called to emulate them. But Israel claims Jacob as its father. This schemer, this planner, this usurper, this manipulator, this exploiter, this one, they say, is our father. Israel telling its story in terms of this man, and believing that God worked through one like that, that all is so much of grace that it actually scandalizes us. No morality play this. No whitewashing of the forefathers and foremothers in order to claim a squeaky clean past. This is a people who knew that God worked with the raw material of human history and of humankind, and that a Jacob was in the line of covenant blessing. How could God use a Jacob? How could God further God's purposes, God's eternal purposes of love and grace through one like that? And yet, you see, that's exactly the heart and center of biblical faith. Finally, Israel knew that it was given life by God, that life was gift, that all was grace, that there was nothing in itself, no righteousness or goodness or mercy or merit. There was no claim at all on this one who moves in inscrutably and blesses, who wrestles with us and struggles with us, but finally will overcome us. I loved Ruth's phrase, knocked to her knees by grace. It is only grace that finally knocks us to our knees. You see, it is in stories like this that you see what the Bible's all about. I will tell you that my whole understanding of grace arises out of these stories. My understanding of grace comes not out of the New Testament, even though it's there. It was in this sense of God choosing this people from progenitors like this one, that it had to be all of grace, that choice, that selection, that election, which brought with it in the very choice and selection tragedy and disappointment and rejection, that very choice, that selection, that was not in order that the rest might be abandoned, but it was a choice of these in order that all might be embraced. If God would choose these, if God would use these, then God will use anything, anyone. Then it is all of grace, radical grace, radical grace. You see, and if it is radical grace in its foundation, it must be radical grace to the end of time and to the whole expanse of the human family. It is grace because God is grace. Will you question God? Will you put God on the stand? Will you say, why God? Sure you will. And the only answer is, I am God and I am full of grace. That's the story of this scoundrel who was finally conquered by grace. at Bethel. In the midst of his guilty night, there heaven opens up. And God says, I will be with you. And I will keep you wherever you go. And I will bring you home. Through many dangers, toils, and snares, I have already come. 'Tis grace has brought me safe thus far. And grace will bring me home. Amazing grace.